Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch, artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Lisa Hendy and Friends here on Breadbox Media. I am so excited about today's conversation. Joining us on the podcast today is John Mark Comer. And John Mark lives and works and writes near Portland, Oregon. He and his wife Tammy live there with their three awesome children. And he is the author of a brand new book that I have been dying to discuss with you. The book is called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. The subtitle, Staying Emotionally Healthy and Spiritually Alive in Our Current Chaos. John Mark, when this book landed on my desk, I was like, hallelujah. I'm waiting to receive this book. I didn't know anything about you, but the book was destined. You wrote this for me. So thank you.
Oh,
thank
goodness.
You so
welcome.
Much. So happy before we dive into conversing about the book, can you just tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and kind of where you are in your spiritual journey?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Portland, Oregon, which is a fascinating place, you know, similar to LA where you're at. We're on kind of the edge of post-Christian America, you know, just this kind of very secular city, very post-Christian, very far left. And so it's a really fascinating place to follow Jesus of Nazareth in. I've been following Jesus for many, many years. I also pastor a church that my wife and I and a crew of friends planted about 16 years ago, and it's right in the center of the city. We live right downtown. So basically that's my thing, is just trying to figure out, how do you follow Jesus in general? Like, what does the growth of the soul toward love look like, and how do you do that in a secular context, in a context that's often hostile to Jesus and his teachings, and in the digital age with the phone and distraction, entertainment, and noise and traffic and busyness and all of the things. And so that's really what I give my life to, is trying to figure out how to both follow Jesus myself and help other people follow him in kind of the current chaos of all things late modern Western America.
Yeah. So this book was really born sort of a, I don't want to call it a crisis, but certainly a moment in your life. And you're very honest about that in the opening pages of the book. Tell us about, you know, kind of what brought this up for you and why you felt so compelled to write this work.
Yeah, I mean, I was nearing 30. We'd planted a church that became a mega church, and it was very large, and my life was just insane as far as hours of work, days of work. The phone by then had hit the market, and like this whole new, what one of my friends recently called the human experiment in omnipresence, that is the smartphone and Wi-Fi. You know, we were just beginning to live with this whole new normal, and it's, I think, shattering effect upon the soul and concentration and attention to God and all of that. And so, yeah, really kind of had, I guess you could call it an early midlife crisis, kind of a burnout, existential, like, what am I doing with my life? And really began to become clear as I was right around age 30 that I was not year over year becoming more and more loving and joyful and peaceful. In fact, it was going in the opposite direction. And that was a really sobering, like, as my friends in the South would say, a come to Jesus moment. Was, you know, which for me was both literal and figurative, of like, oh, wow, I think it's time to adjust the trajectory and maybe change the metrics of success that I'm right now living into and find a different way to live and follow Jesus.
So you discuss in the book this this phrase that was accredited to Dallas Willard.
Yes.
The phrase, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. There is nothing else. So what was the context for that, and how did it hit you like a ton of bricks?
Yeah, so that the context for that was actually a phone call, a conversation between Dallas Willard and John Ortberg. And if you don't know those names, Dallas Willard was a philosopher at the University of Southern California, not far from where you're at, Lisa, and lived just up in Chatsworth. And for many decades was a fantastic academic, but he's best known outside of academia as a writer and teacher of the Way of Jesus. And really not to overestimate, but I don't know of any writer or thinker or teacher that's had a greater impact on my faith, the way that I view Jesus and what it means to follow Jesus outside of kind of the writings of scripture itself, than Willard. And he mentored for about 20 years John Ortberg, who I do know and I'm friends with and has, I don't know that I would call him a mentor, but he's kind enough to, he's an older, wiser man, pastor, writer, leader that I sit down with on a quasi-regular basis to learn from. And it's a conversation between the two of them when Ortberg was about my age and he called up Willard out in California and said, all right, same thing. I'm kind of getting sucked into the busyness of life and church and leadership, and asked him what to do. And Willard just had those two iconic lines. He said, first thing he actually said was that hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. And then he said, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. And that was honestly not remotely on my radar. If I were to tell you, like, here are the main problems in the world today, or the main problems for a follower of Jesus in the world today, I don't think hurry would have even been on my list, much less at the top of it. But the longer I have sat with Willard's thesis, that really hurry is the issue underneath so many of the other issues in our day, the more I have come to a deep conviction that he was onto something. That, you know, hurry is just incompatible with spiritual life in general. If you define spiritual life just as our capacity to receive and give love and relationship to God and other people, that requires time. It requires relational space, and it requires what, you know, Edith Wharton so many years ago called the power of sustained attention, the ability to pay attention, to focus, to sit in the quiet with a soul that is settled before God or the person in front of you. And hurry is just incompatible with that. Like, you literally can't really have much of a spiritual life, much less become a person of love and joy and peace, if you're in a life of chronic hurry.
So this message had sort of a foundational kind of cause of foundational change in your life. It caused you to really change even where you were pastoring and the life that you were living. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I ended up kind of resigning from this large organization that I was leading, and I went on a sabbatical, which I had the privilege of doing, and then came back and just began kind of a multi-year life overhaul. And I mean, the tricky thing is all of the weight and the inertia and the movement of Western culture is toward a life of hurry and shopping and materialism and digital distraction, entertainment and overload, right? Mm-hmm. So to live a life of unhurry in late modern America or wherever you're listening from in the Western world, I mean, it is, you have to be, in Willard's language, ruthless. Like, it's not like, you don't dabble with it. You don't toy around with it. You have to make a pretty, like, sincere, deliberate, and disciplined, countercultural, like, movement of life. So, yeah, I really began to spend several years just trying to craft rhythms of life, or if you want to call them spiritual disciplines, or counter habits to the hurry of the secular age, whatever, to really slow my life down, to simplify things around what really matters. And that was kind of the pursuit. And it was incredibly hard to do. It was like maybe the most difficult thing I've ever done. And so that struggle to figure out how to slow down in a world of speed and distraction, how to pay attention, that really was the life journey that this book was born out of. And then my attempt to help other people do the same, because it's just been beyond rich and rewarding in my own soul.
So the book is, it's interesting in layout, and maybe you would want to say a few words about that. But I think that, you know, in a way, the very act of picking up a book like this, that will take a little bit of time to read, invites us yeah. into something that most of us don't usually take time for these days, which is an act of contemplation. We want our information in 280 characters yes. or less, or we yes, want, you exactly. know, less than, you know, 90-second YouTube video or whatever. So you're asking your reader to do something a little countercultural, but I mean, you can see in your own life how making these changes has benefited you. So tell me why the message needed to be in a book and kind of how the book came to fruition.
Yeah, well, you know, it makes me think of, there's this philosopher who died a few years ago named Albert Borgman. I'm not familiar, sure if you're familiar with his work. And he was a philosopher of, and his specialty was basically on the impact of TV and entertainment on Western culture. So he's, you know, has this famous line where he said, and this, he's writing before the iPhone, before the digital age, in the kind of 90s, early 2000s. And he had this famous line where he said, the most important decision that you will ever make is whether or not you have a TV in your house. And the second most important decision you will ever make is, if so, where you put it in your house. And so, and interesting, he, and again, he's writing before the iPhone and the digital age and the podcast world, before all of this, he advocated for what he called focal practices, which could be anything from spiritual disciplines like contemplative prayer, reading the Bible, to gardening or hiking or walking your dog or playing chess, just things that that make you focus, where you have to be fully present to the moment, not multitasking, not distracted, not in the noise, but things that just were embodied practices or habits or hobbies or spiritual disciplines that really brought you into the moment. And one of the things I love about all things literature, I'm an avid reader, I love the world of books, I read daily, is that it's a focal practice. You know, you can't read while watching the TV, while listening to music, while texting with your friend, you know, at least not read any kind of substance. You have to kind of put that away and turn everything off and find somewhere quiet and focus your mental muscle. And each time you read, you're building your mental muscle, you're building that power of sustained attention, that capacity to really sit with an idea, thoughts, reality, sit with God, to sit with your own soul, to process, to be present to the moment. So there's something about a book that is, I love the podcast world, I do podcasts, blogs are great, you know, media is great, but there's something about a book that just requires a couple hours of sitting in the quiet alone that I think is, I think regardless of what the book is about, there's a focal practice and a healthy act of slowing and presence that comes just when we read and when we give thought to the complexity of life that just cannot be captured in a tweet.
So the book is, you know, really striking a chord with people. And I was just looking over on Amazon today and noticing that you have upwards of 60 reviews and that every person who's reviewed it so far has given it a very high rating, which is awesome. So congrats
Thank you
on that.
Wonderful and, people.
I wasn't surprised to see that because while I didn't know your background, I mentioned that when the book came, I was just so relieved to see it because you put together, you know, in this very kind of readable, relatable message, you know, truths that come from all kinds of different places. And I wanted to share with you that on the day that, well, it wasn't the day that I got it, but that week I was actually speaking at a local church here, and my group that I was with that morning was a group of mothers who were coming together okay. to kind of talk about how to raise their children in faith in the digital age. And I quoted yeah. a couple of excerpts from your book to them and kind of talked with them and gave them that quote from Dallas. And I mean, more than one of them was looking at me through very tearful eyes. And I was thinking about how for so many of them, the biggest thing that they would say is, I never have time for prayer. I'm so busy with everything yes. in my life. And they're not doing it. Their biggest reason for doing it is that they fear if their kid isn't in, you know, 16 travel soccer teams and on all the extracurriculars and doing, yep. you know, little baby yoga and all this, that they're going to somehow be disadvantaged. And,
yes.
you know, that they want the best for their kids. So we create this environment of hurry. And and so I could see that they were like these plants that needed to be watered with the words that you were giving. And I was a very poor substitute for you. But one section of the book that really struck me was the section where you give sort of 12 kind of practices for simplicity. And I wanted to ask you specifically about one of them, which is number 12, where you say, lead a cheerful, happy revolt against the spirit of materialism. So can you say, can you say a little bit about that for our listeners?
Oh, yeah. So that's actually based on a quote from a biographer of St. Francis of Assisi, who obviously is such a rich Catholic saint, who it was said of him that he led a cheerful, happy revolt against the spirit of materialism. So St. Francis was known for, you know, an incredibly austere lifestyle. I mean, simplicity or minimalism or whatever you want to call it,
right.
to the nth degree. If he gave up his wealth, he gave up his privilege, would literally go around and, you know, almost in a robe and raggers almost to this day. Franciscan monks wear that simple, you know, outfit. They wear a rope instead of a leather belt because it was cheaper to get rope than leather, you know, and this was all voluntary. But unlike many other traditions in church history that put an emphasis on asceticism or discipline or frugality that were really dour or honestly kind of OCD or, you know, sometimes at times mentally unhealthy, St. Francis was just famous for being this incredibly joyful, likely a type 7 on the Enneagram, you know, just joyful, happy person that saw spreading the message of simple living as synonymous with spreading the message of joy in the kingdom of God. And so his revolt against kind of the wealth and privilege and materialism of his day, which again was pales in comparison to that of our own, was not this like angry spittle on his beard, you know, kind of depressive movement. It was this joyful, there's a better way to live. And Jesus himself said that about money and possessions. He said, it is more blessed, or that can be translated, it is a happier life to give than it is to receive. So mm-hmm. a life of generosity and simplicity is actually a happier life than one of shopping and materialism and overload. Most of us don't believe Jesus. We don't agree with Jesus. We struggle to, you know, trust Jesus' interpretation of happiness on that one. But St. Francis, he got there in his heart and he just lived this life of rich joy. So yeah, I think that without going all the way to some kind of a dour poverty theology, I think we can resist the materialism of our age, which is, you know, Alan Fadley, and I quote in the book, he has this great line, the drive to possess is an engine for hurry, meaning the more possessions that we want, and the more activities that we do, specifically at the material level, which creates time, distraction, more hours at work, more stress, more things to clean and care for and play with, it just drives our life into this frenetic speed of hurry and pace of life. And so these things are connected. And the more that we can slow down and actually live simpler and even have less things in our home, in our apartment, in our life, on our wish list, in our heart, in our desires, the more we can just joyfully live grateful and present to the day.
I like that you offer a few kind of specific tips for this. And, you know, some of the things that struck out to me were things like just as simple as, you know, check out a book from the library instead of purchasing
yes.
it, or share a lift with someone, or, you
yep.
know, like they don't have to be, it doesn't have to be rocket science. I'm curious because you're in this season of, I know, you know, the book is very recently launched and I've been through book launches and I know
yep.
for myself, the pace that goes with that. So
yes.
I guess I want to ask you how, you know, you're coping, how you cope in your life with the busyness of demands as a pastor, as a husband, as a father, and, you know, as someone who's busy in professional circles as well, you know, how do you carve out time for contemplation and prayer and the presence that you need to the people in your life that matter most?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. This has been the most ironic. I've written several books before this, but this one has been an ironic experience because releasing a book is one of the most stressful things you can possibly do. And I'm releasing a book on hurry and slowing down and being at peace and emotionally healthy and present to the moment. And so there are days when I feel like a raging hypocrite, you know, or whatever. And so it's been a really interesting experience, and it's caused me to do a lot of just reflective soul work, you know, and how much is too much and all of that. So I guess how I've handled it, I'm not sure that this is the best way to do it or not, is I've definitely outside of, so I normally practice like a pretty rigorous rule of life or fixed hour schedule. And I'm outside of it for about 4 or 5 weeks around this book release. I have one more week left. I'm outside of my normal rule of life. I'm outside of my normal routine. And I definitely feel it in my body. I feel the stress that it brings, I feel behind. I feel not as present, not as joyful as I'd like to be. But basically, I did two things. One is that there's certain practices in my rule of life that for me are non-negotiable, and I refuse to give up no matter how many press things or book release things or travel things are on the docket. So morning prayer, I just have refused to budge from. I have spent uninterrupted, long, beautiful times every single morning in the quiet with God. And Sabbath has been a second one, just long 24 hours, phone off, zero things, zero interviews, zero writing, you know, blogs for the book reports, zero Instagram stuff, just fully offline every week, and then sleeping a full 8 hours every single night. Those three things have just been non-negotiable for me, you know? And they're not enough if then the rest of the time in between, you're just go, 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 you know? And then I just scheduled it. So I said, I put a limit on it. I said, you know, for these 5 weeks, I'm going to just do everything I possibly can to support this book. I really believe in the message. I want to get it out there. I want to let as many people know as possible, as many people like you that want to talk about it, I'll talk to them. And then I have a date literally on my calendar where it's actually next Thursday. I am going offline and I'm done doing everything for the most part. And my wife and I are going to San Diego for 3 days.
Nice.
And we got a nice little Airbnb. We're going to turn off our phones and sit on the beach and read some novels and reconnect. And we were laughing last night because I got home late. And she's like, I miss you. I'm like, I miss you too. And we're like, next Thursday, you know, we'll,
we can do it.
And we know we'll see each other before then. But, you know, we know we have uninterrupted, you know, leisurely time for rest. And so just understanding there are seasons of activity that you can't really get away from. It's interesting that you brought up young moms, which is such a passion for me, both as a parent with three kids and then as a pastor of a church. And, you know, we're in a city, so most of the families have littler kids, not a lot of older families, because of cost of living. And so there's a lot of families with little kids. And I'm just trying to figure out, how do I pastor people in that stage of life into a contemplative, unhurried, present life of prayer and joy? And I was really blessed a few weeks ago by Ronald Rollheiser's recent book. Are you a fan,
yes,
of Rollheiser?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had him on the show? I don't know if you've had him.
I know. I haven't had the gift of doing that, but yes.
So he's a hero of mine, and I'm not sure if you've read his most recent book. Is like every single young mom on the planet should read it. It's barely even a book. I think it's 90 pages, but they're tiny pages, and it has pictures, so it's probably you know, you can read it in 30 minutes, right? It's a 30-minute read. It's not in-depth like some of his other stuff, and it's beautifully written as always. And it's all on this idea of how the home, in particular parenting, in particular parenting little kids, can have a similar effect on your soul and your formation into a person of love as life in a monastery can. And he uses this analogy of monastic bells and how Saint Benedict and others, when they were founding monastic orders in the 6th and 7th century, how they had this idea of bells that would ring. You know, for Benedict, it was 7 times a day in the Benedictine tradition for fixed hour prayer, the daily office where you'd come and, you know, you'd pray and chant the Psalms. And Benedict and others taught their monks that when that bell rings, before wristwatches, obviously, you know, you had to drop whatever you were doing. If you were gardening, if you were in the middle of a letter, he said, literally stop writing mid-sentence and come to prayer. And part of it was just to get everybody to prayer in the same time. But part of it was to teach the monks that their time was not their own and their life was not their own. And their whole life was set before God to transform them into people of love. And he just makes the point that if you parent this way, your children can become your monastic bells. They can become these interruptions to your day, because children are just a nonstop series of interruptions. You know, they don't schedule, they don't like put a date on. You and I, we put this date on. I didn't even do it. Our assistants did it. But, you know, put a date on the calendar and scheduled it, and here's the thing, and you come to it. Children aren't like that. They don't schedule a month out. They just barge into your room and start talking, or they spill milk on the floor.
They barge into your bathroom. And
yeah, they wake up in the middle of the night. It's exhausting. And most of us, myself included, respond to those interruptions with anger, irritation, interruption. And that's tragic. You know what I mean? C.S. Lewis once said that how you respond to an interruption is who you really are. Like in those moments, like our real self, where we're actually at with God and our journey toward love, it comes out. And Rollheiser's thing was, we can respond with anger, irritation, frustration, or we can let those interruptions and our beautiful children or whatever it is for you in your stage of life be our monastic bells. These calls to remind us our time is not our own. Our life is not our own. This is about becoming a person of love. And he just tells the story, I forget the name, of an Italian monk who went to a monastery for 30 years to pray and came back and realized that his mom, who would have been, you know, I don't know, 60 something or whatever, had raised a number of kids, and she was both more loving and more contemplative than he was after 30 years in a monastery. And he just realized, oh, wow, if you parent in the right way, it can have the same or a very similar effect on your soul as living in a monastery can, if you let it bring you into contemplation as defined as presence to what is in the moment.
I think those are hopeful words for women and men in a season of life where you feel like, wow, I'd really like to go, you know, spend 3 hours a day at the church reading my Bible, or, you know,
but
the station of life that we're in right now doesn't afford
us.
Yeah. So we pray where we are. But I think it's the state of mind that you address in this book, that, you know, the permission to kind of have a life that's somewhat set aside and doesn't necessarily look like what everyone else is doing, and that's okay. You know, that the yoke is light.
Yes.
So, yeah. Well, I could talk with you all day, but I definitely know that you have many people who want to do that as well. So I just want to ask you, for folks who would like to use the book as a starting off point, and again, the name of the book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, and we'll have a link in our show notes to this so everyone can grab it. But are there other places online that people can connect with you to kind of continue to learn from your message?
Yeah, easy. JohnMarkComer.com, Comer, C-O-M-E-R. And then I have two podcasts that I teach in. One is Bridgetown Church, which is the church I pastor, and I teach at about 31 Sundays a year. Right now I'm teaching on Unhurrying with a Rule of Life, so we're talking about all of this in our teaching series right now. And then I host another little podcast called This Cultural Moment. That's a little bit more of about life in Western post-Christian culture. And then at the back of the book, if you get the book, you'll see a little link in the back to a free digital companion that is a kind of a workbook of exercises, all uber practical, not conceptual, not even chapters in a book, just practices and little exercises for very practical ways to actually slow down. And you can do the little digital companion and the exercises by yourself. You can do it with a group of your friends or other moms. You can do it with a small group from your church. You can do it with a Bible study, however, whatever iteration you want. And it's all very practical to go from kind of aspirational ideas of, oh yes, a life where I'm less hurried and more present sounds great, to actually getting it into your muscle memory and developing some best practices to really live an unhurried, joyful, loving, present, peaceful life.
And if you love the sound of John Mark's voice and you want to hear it more of it, this book is actually also available in Audible. Are you doing the narration for that? Or
I did. It's not out quite yet. It comes out in a couple of weeks.
Awesome.
But yes, I just locked myself in a studio last week and read my book aloud, which is an incredibly unpleasant experience for the author. Hopefully it will be more pleasant for the listener.
It's sort of interesting practice, though. I did that with two of my books, and one of them in particular, there's a chapter that I wrote about a trip to Rwanda that I took, and I had myself and the production staff in tears, and it took us probably three times as long to record that chapter. But there's something about actually reading the words aloud that I find really, you know, impacts you in a different way. So definitely, friends, you want to check out the podcast and other ways to kind of connect with John Mark in that way. John Mark, before we let you get back to your rule of life, any kind of closing thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I mean, I would, I guess just this, you don't have to live the way that everybody else is living. You don't have to have your kid in for sports and ballet and yoga and chess practice and whatever. You don't have to watch TV every night. You don't have to be on Instagram. You don't have to do all the things. You don't have to make X number of dollars and work X hours at the office to be a happy, healthy soul. You don't have to live that way. And if you look out there and just ask yourself, is this the kind of person that I want to become long term? You likely don't want to live the way that everybody else is living. Very few people end life well, rich and full of life and joy and contentment and gratitude and love. And so I think the invitation of Jesus is always to live a countercultural life. It's always to step out of the mainstream and kind of follow what everybody else is doing, what Jesus called the broad way, the way that everybody else is living, which is just kind of do what you want and get sucked away and live the way that people live. And Jesus' invitation is always to the narrow way, meaning I think what he means by that is there's a specific way to live as outlined in Jesus and his teachings and his tradition that is the way to life. It's the way to joy and the life that we really crave. And so my constant invitation is to people to step out of the way everybody else is doing it, to slow down, to live a countercultural, unhurried life in a world of speed and noise and digital distraction and entertainment and materialism and shopping and overload and exhaustion, and just to carve out a life of quiet, simple journey toward love.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, friends, you can see why I want you to read this book. Again, it's The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. John Mark, thank you so much for the gift of your time and for everything that you do to serve so many and to lead us closer to Jesus.
It's been such a joy to chat to you, Lisa. Thank you for your gracious hospitality and your time.
Thanks. Well, friends, that is it for this week's episode of Lisa Hendy and Friends. Definitely, if you've enjoyed the podcast, we would love it if you could leave a quick star review or rating, or even better, share this, and especially John Mark's book, with a friend this week. And I just want to thank you all for your endless prayers for our family, how supportive you've been in the midst of my parents' health considerations. So thank you for that. And just know that I'm with you in prayer. Until next week, I hope you have an awesome week, friends. God bless.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by... It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com. Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.